Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Costas does it again! It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Testy. It is episode 146. If you're listening on drop day, it's November 4th. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, 5 stars. It helps us out so much when you guys do that. And as always, we're on YouTube on the WEEI channel. On the Play Testy playlist there, you can find all our episodes. Hit the thumbs up on the videos. We really appreciate it when you guys do that. And you can find us on the socials at Play Testy on both Twitter and Instagram. So if you're listening on drop day, hopefully you're listening on drop day, because we're going to get our first sort of, I don't want to say our first bit of Red Sox news, because technically we've had Red Sox news. Lucas Giolito opted in to his player option, $19 million for next year. So like, we've heard stuff like that. But the first kind of, and we still haven't heard about Ref Snyder's option, but the Red Sox are almost certainly going to pick that up. But the first kind of not sure bet decision, and I guess you could say decisions, are about to be made, and that's the qualifying offer decisions. And the Sox have a few, they have a bunch of free agents, but the only two guys that have a chance to get the qualifying offer are Tyler O'Neill and Nick Pivetta. Kenley Jansen's not getting it because he's gotten it in the past. You can only get it once. Chris Martin, obviously a really good relief pitcher. He's not going to, like, they're not going to offer him $21 million. And you can't get the qualifying offer if you were traded midseason, which means guys like Danny Jansen, Lucas Sims, Luis Garcia, they're not getting it. So we'll talk today about Tyler O'Neill and Nick Pivetta, whether we think they're going to get the qualifying offer, whether we would give them the qualifying offer. I think we can have a couple of discussions there. But I'm here with Sammy. I'm here with Pat. Where to begin here? I guess let's start with what we would do. Let's start with Nick Pivetta, because I think that's a little bit easier of a conversation. I wouldn't give him the qualifying offer. I don't think he's worth $21 million. I think if you give it to him, he's guaranteed to take it, and that's an untradeable contract. The only way I'd give it to him is if you had a deal in place to eat half the money and get a prospect for him, and even that would only work if the Red Sox were committed to go over the tax, which we know John Henry's not going to do that. Or if he is going to do it, it's not going to be by a lot. So you can't be wasting resources like that. So yeah, Nick Pivetta, not getting it from me.
Yeah, agreed. John Henry would really need to be committed to his next epic quest if he were going to go over the luxury tax. So yeah, Pivetta is one of those guys that we've been hearing for years. This is the year he breaks out. He's going to figure it out. And it just hasn't really happened. And that's not to say that he hasn't been a quality major league starting pitcher. I think he has, but right now where the Red Sox are at, they need a guy. They need a number one or a number two, a high quality number two. So unfortunately, despite the good times and the good memories with Pivetta, I think the move right now would be to not offer him the qualifying offer.
Yeah. I think in my eyes, Pivetta, it's weird as we've heard it, but I think Pivetta kind of plays out like a Lugo or a Waka, like a legit change of scenery guy, maybe figures it out, lives up to this potential we've been hearing about for what feels like 7 years. But in no way, shape, or form can you give Nick Pivetta $20 million this offseason. He may be worth that after next year if he goes somewhere, figures something out. This point in time, with the limited resources we have, absolutely not.
And there's a world, it's not the world we're in, but if the Red Sox didn't have as much success this year filling out the rotation with guys like Cutter, and if Houck didn't become an established starting pitcher, and you know they needed multiple starters, you know, an argument could be made that, yeah, 1 year deal you'd overpay, but it could give you some flexibility with Pivetta. But at this point, the Red Sox have four starters locked into the rotation. You've got Hauk, you have Bayo, you have Giolito, you have Cutter. What this rotation is missing is the guy at the top. And Sammy, you said it. Pat, you said it. Pivetta, we've seen that upside. We've seen him put it together for stretches. But right now, what the Red Sox don't need is a guy that maybe could be that guy. They need a guy that is going to be that guy, a guy that you can count on to get you through the season. And the only way I would consider doing it is if John Henry was going to spend money and then you could trade him or Cutter. But it's just that's not a scenario. It's not even worth talking like that because we know it's not going to happen.
Yeah, unrealistic. Assuming the Red Sox don't bring back Pivetta, where do you think he goes? I have an Houston. Idea. Wow, that was my idea. You say Houston?
Houston.
That's where I was going. I was going to say Houston or Tampa because he's one of these guys, and you don't even need to look at the metrics to see this. He's got that quote unquote stuff, like hammer curveball, nice little cutter now, fastball. Looks like it spins really well to the naked eye, but it's hard. It's like 96, sometimes up to 97. So changeup too, if I remember correctly. So he's got a good mix. Big body, looks like a starting pitcher. He's the kind of guy, like if you want him to get maximized, you just don't know if Boston is the right place right now, just the way he pitches. So it wouldn't shock me. This was the long way of me saying, it wouldn't shock me if he went elsewhere.
What do you think he gets? What money do you think he gets, Sammy? If he goes to one of those places, what kind of deal do you think he gets?
3 or 4 years at $15 million, just because the starting pitching market, there's such a premium right now. Like what did Walker just get? 3 for $51 million?
Yes. Okay, and he's coming off a little bit better. That's where I was gonna go. I was gonna say around 3 years for 40.
Yeah, let me lower that a little bit.
3 years for 42.
Let's say 3 years, 30. 30 or 33, something like that. Maybe not 40.
Pat's giving us a face. Pat, what do you think? You think he's not getting 3 years?
You're muted, Pat.
Oh, he's muted. You bum.
Frankie Montas got $16 million last offseason. You're telling me, coming off of the 2 year stretch that Frankie Montas had, Nick Pivetta's not getting Frankie Montas money? You're insane. You're insane.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, hold on. You're looking at it per year. We're giving him multiple years. Frankie Montas didn't get multiple years.
I think he does a 1-1. I think he gets like 2 for $30 million with a player option for.
So he's gonna. So he could have the flexibility to break out and opt out. It's kind of like what Waka did a little bit this past year.
So like Giolito, kind of as well. Maybe a little more. Yeah, a little less
money.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, my first guess was a little bit high. I want to retract that. Let's say what do you guys think the annual value is? I guess we could do it because the years depends on how much a team believes in him. But I feel like the price is going to be pretty fairly consistent across the board. Like,
well, that depends on the years for me, because I think if he takes 3 years, I think he could get, 13 to 15 a year. If he takes 4 years, I don't think he's getting 4 years and $60 million. So he's not getting 15 if he goes for the fourth year. But yeah, I think he ends up somewhere in between $35 and $45 million guaranteed.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. I could see it going up as far as 60 if there's a team that really likes him and they want to give him 5 years, something crazy. Ooh. But I think that's a little bit unlikely. It's just so weird with pitching. Every year we go into free agency with an idea of what we think the pitching market is going to look like, and it never pans out. The only thing that we all, I think, nailed was Yamamoto getting $325 million. So, yeah, Pivetta's a weird one. Because like I said, Sammy, the stuff is still there.
Yeah, the stuff is there. And it's not even just like some guys you see have electric stuff and it just doesn't translate to results. And it's like, okay, some team is going to be able to figure that out. Like, bad example, but the one guy I think of is Caleb Ward, who threw 100. And it's like, okay, how is this guy not good? And then goes somewhere else and gets good. Pivetta is a little bit different because he's got really good stuff. And he's put together extended stretches of really good baseball. Like, he struck out 10 straight guys this year twice.
Yeah.
And last year had basically, a 3.5 month run of being one of the top, 10 pitchers in baseball. Like, he's done it before, just not for a full season.
The consistency with him. You know what else I bet? And this is kind of a weird take, but his... his delivery is so fundamentally sound. I bet pitching coaches would love to work with Nick Pivetta. Just everything he does is how you're taught. The way he moves on the mound is very, how do you put it? Like, not generic, because that sounds derogatory, but if you're a pitching coach, you'd be like, repeatable. Look how Nick Pivetta like delivers the ball. That's so repeatable. It's repeatable. Yeah, exactly. He can repeat his delivery, which is weird because repeatable, you would think he's consistent, but he's the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. Tough guy to predict.
Let's move to the other guy, because this is, I think, the more interesting discussion. Tyler O'Neill. Oh, wait. Okay. So we all are in agreement, though, that Nick, we said we wouldn't do it. We're all in agreement that he's not getting it, right?
Correct. Oh, we wouldn't do it, yeah, and we don't think he's going to get it.
Yeah. All right. Tyler O'Neill, because this one I have different answers on. So we'll start with what we would do. What we would do. Tyler O'Neill, the qualifying offer is $21.05 million. He's coming off a year in which he had the third highest OPS against left-handed pitching in baseball amongst qualifiers, only behind Aaron Judge and, I don't know how to pronounce his first name, Helio Ramos
with the Giants. Helio Ramos.
Yeah, behind just those two in OPS against lefties, he had the third best at-bats per home run in baseball behind just Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge. But obviously, health concerns. The guy has missed time pretty much every year of his career and had multiple IL stints this year with a bunch of different things. Although I would argue that this year they were a little bit more freak things. Like, he had that leg infection. He had the concussion. It's not, in the past, he's had stuff that you'd think would come back, but he's great. But is he worth the qualifying offer? I'm yes. I'll give you my yes. And you guys can, I have a feeling that you're both going to be no's on this, but someone tell me if you agree. I'll give my reasoning. I would give it to him because, yes, $21 million is more on an annual basis than Tyler O'Neill. I think Tyler O'Neill, without a qualifying offer on the open market, could get a two-year, $32-ish, $36-ish million deal. So that's around $16 to $18 million a year. So $21 would be an overpay for the 1 year. But it's very well documented that the Red Sox did not hit left-handed pitching well. This allows you to keep one of the best left-handed pitching mashers in baseball, keep roster flexibility to go into next offseason where maybe there's a right-handed bat you like a little bit better who you'd want to sign long-term, Vlad Jr. available. Keep the flexibility, keep a left-handed masher in the lineup. I know he strikes out a lot, but the guy that everyone keeps talking about to replace him, Teoscar Hernandez, like, what, he swings and miss. Tyler O'Neill was in the fifth percentile in baseball in whiff percentage. Teoscar Hernandez was in the seventh percentile. So Keeping Tyler O'Neill, you have a lefty masher. Yeah, you overpay a little bit, but you keep your flexibility. I think he's a good fit on the team. He's proven he can do it in Boston. I would do it. I know it's a little bit of an overpay. I would do it.
One year overpay, who cares, really?
Would you do it?
In a vacuum, yes, I would do it. For the Red Sox, I don't know. I hear you with he hits left-handed pitching well. That's a huge issue for the Red Sox. But with Tyler O'Neill, you're basically getting a platoon, part-time, bad defender in left field. Like, he used to be a speed demon.
Why do you say platoon?
Because he didn't play there regularly in 2024.
Oh, you're saying defensive platoon? Like, he'd play some outfield?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so sorry, he would hit every day.
He'd hit every day. Platoon as in he's DH left field. He platoons the position, but he's in the lineup every day. Which, you know, he's valuable and everything. But, like, tons of strikeouts. A lot. Great power. Super useful. He had a very low barrel rate and still hit 31 home runs, which is hilarious because he's just so strong. He doesn't even need to hit the ball very well to get it out. But you're getting decreasing speed. He's getting slower. The defense is getting worse. The injury concerns are, it doesn't get much higher. I know those were freak injuries. I agree with you on that. But his track record speaks for itself when it comes to injuries.
I agree.
And I hate to knock guys for that because it's not really their fault, especially a guy like O'Neill who, Jesus Christ, he takes care of his body. We've seen him in person. The dude is an absolute unit. I just think the Red Sox really need to curb that strikeout issue. We saw the Yankees strike out a lot. We look what happened to them in the World Series. They faced a good pitching staff, and they look like pumpkins out there. So I think strikeouts are what really crush teams in the playoffs. And if the Red Sox want to compete, they have to strike out less. And unfortunately, Tyler O'Neill just, he strikes out way too much. On top of that, his numbers against righties, below 700 OPS. So you're really only signing him to hit the lefties, and you're not getting much else out of him. So if it weren't the Red Sox, I'd be like, yeah, this is a good player. He's worth 1 year, 21-ish million. But just the fit right now, I think it's okay, but there are other guys who could be better.
So you would not give him... So it's not even just the 1 year... Would you not give him like 2 years, 32? You just want a completely different guy for that spot.
I just need a guy who puts the ball in play more. They strike out so much, the Red Sox. I think, what, third most in Major League Baseball? That's just not... You can't win like that. I don't want to say it's impossible, but it is nearly impossible to go deep into the playoffs when you're facing good pitching staffs day in and day out, and you're striking out that much. So I don't know who off the top of my head, Teoscar. That's not much of an improvement, like you just explained.
He still strikes out a crazy amount.
Yeah, that's so I don't issue. Know who.
That's kind of my point, though, Sammy, is yes, go via trade, and maybe you have a few more options, but there is no clear option to me that's an obvious fit here, which is why I like the idea of a one-year guy. It's like, it's not a perfect... Yeah, he's not perfect. He strikes out, and that's a huge problem for the Sox. But yeah, if you get him on a one-year deal, then, yeah, that's still going to be a problem this year, but you kind of get a reset next year if it's just a one-year deal. But if you sign him for 2 years, now you're kind of married to him.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not saying... I don't think he's not a fit at all. I think he's a... Like, sure, he fits. I just think you could do a little bit better in the way of, like, finding someone who doesn't K that much and who can also hit left-handed pitching. And that's probably going to have to come in a trade, because looking at the free agent class, it's Bregman, but he's, you know, 31 years old. That's probably not going to happen. Maybe
I want to hear Pat, what would you, cause I can't even tell. Sometimes by your faces, I can tell what you're thinking, but for this one, I can't quite tell what you're thinking. So you can go either way here.
I'm giving him the qualifying offer.
And
Sammy alluded to it. There's no right-handed options that are better than Tyler O'Neill. You could say Teoscar. The difference here is 1 year, because you have a field logjam right now. If you give Teoscar 3 years, you're in the same exact thing. Tyler O'Neill gives you that flexibility. You need someone who's a right-handed bat and can play every. Roman ready until, for all we know, Braden Montgomery ready. Like, they have guys coming. They need right-handed bats, and they need power. Tyler O'Neill is both of that, and I think that's the only guy you can feasibly get on a one-year deal that is an actual asset offensively.
You make a good point there, Pat. The prospect thing is a good point to add to this, because, yeah, like, they need a right-handed bat. They have one of the best right-handed hitting prospects in baseball that is almost ready to make his debut in Christian Campbell. But we see it year after year where prospects come up, and even though they eventually get good, like whether it be that year or in a future year, like Jackson Churio came up this year and he was terrible for 2 months. And after that, he was incredible. Jackson Holliday came up and he was never really good, and he'll probably be great in the future. But the entire year, he didn't really put together, outside of like a 10-game stretch in the middle there, he really didn't put together much at the big league level. So you can't really count on the prospects doing it. But at the same time, like if Christian Campbell or any of these guys, for that matter, come up and I don't even want to say light the world on fire, but show that they're everyday guys, like you also, it's nice to have that flexibility to move on after the 1 year. Whereas if you sign them for 2 years, or if you sign anyone for multi-years, if they sign Teoscar Hernandez for 3 or 4 years, and you know, he shows that, you know, he's like he goes from an 850-ish OPS guy to around an 800 OPS guy without defense. And it's like, oh, I want to play the kids over this guy. Now you're married to that contract for 3 more years, and you've got a Yoshida situation on your hands all over.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Over again.
I got to take. maybe not a take. We haven't mentioned Anthony Santander at all. And I know he's 30 years old, but I like him. 44 home runs last year, plays outfield and first base, and he DH'd a bit last year too, so he's cool with that. He's going to cost a ton, and you're probably going to have to eat some ugly seasons towards the end. But a guy like him, like his style of play, I feel like can translate for at least another 4 or 5 seasons. He's a switch hitter, better against righties, but he still hits lefties fairly well, about right under 800 OPS wise. And he slugs like crazy against him, almost 500. So maybe if the Red Sox want to get a little creative and maybe you're trading for a pitcher and your big signing is Santander. Wait, Santander, Santander, whatever the
fuck. I think it's Santander.
Santander. Jeez, we're going to have to, if he comes to the Red Sox, we're going to have to figure that out. Tony Taters is what they call him down in Baltimore. So
I like that.
Just an idea. I wanted to get your guys' opinion. It's going to be expensive, but that guy can hit.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear what you think he would get, because I've seen predictions for him that are all over the place because he's such a unique free agent where it's like he's been good, but this year he popped 44 bombs. Don't look at his stats. And Sammy, if you already have seen it, don't say it. What do you think, if you haven't seen it already, what do you think his OPS was this year?
I see it, so I won't say.
Okay,
it.
Pat, what do you think? 44 homers, what do you think his OPS was?
21.
What do you say?
921.
Way off.
Yeah, it was 814.
Oh!
And Tyler O'Neill's, for comparison there, was 847. And obviously, I could compare OPSs all day. The one thing OPS doesn't count is how many games did you play. So that obviously Tyler O'Neill's biggest detractor is going to be games played. But I like Santander because I've always wanted the Sox to have more switch hitters. They never have switch hitters. If they wanted to, they could go crazy and get Santander, Jerickson Profar, and Jorge Polanco, my guy from last year.
Profar is a good idea too. Someone will end up talking about. By the way, I think Santander's his OPS is a little bit lower because he's not a fantastic on base guy. He's like good but not great. Most of his damage is from slug. Like what did he slug? He slugged 506. So, and his OPS plus is 134. Weird stat line on this guy. Weird. But he's a good player, and you put him. I mean, can you imagine? You have like let's just say Devers, Santander, Casas. Oh my God. That's a nightmare for a lefty, but imagine a righty going into that. That's like right into the teeth.
Another stat on Santander, because we're going to talk about strikeout rate a ton. So his whiff rate, he's in the 76th percentile. Strikeout rate, he's in the 66th percentile. Strikes out less than 20% of the time. What a weird guy. How is all of his damage on the OPS with slug, but he doesn't strike out? And let's see, what's his walk percentage? Walk percentage, 8.7%.
Maybe his BABIP is low. Is he a low BABIP guy because he plays in that disgustingly huge new Baltimore ballpark?
That's another interesting thing is how many
barrel.
He hits a lot of balls to right field. It's not necessarily an ideal Fenway Park fit. Let's see if I can hold this up for you guys to see. It's right field.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, his on-base probably goes up in Boston, but I don't know if he hits 44 home runs just with how much he pulls it.
What do you think the deal he gets is going to be? How much money do you think he gets?
I got no clue, man. That's such a tough one. I don't know. Let's say like, well, how many years do we think he's getting? I think he'll get 5 or 6.
How old is he?
Just turned 30 2 weeks ago. Gotta give him 5. He'll get at least 5.
Yeah, he'll get 5. I'm going to go with 5 years at $96 million. Ooh, I don't know.
Right under 100?
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. It's a work in progress, but I'm trying to like predict how much each free agent is going to get and where they're going to go so I can like go back and see how I did. Mm-hmm. And I just got stuck on him because I legitimately could see him getting anywhere between like 70 and 140. Like,
So his defense is also weird because he can play first, he can play left, and he's also, you know, comfortable DHing, but he's not a good defender at any of those positions. So it's like, yeah, he's versatile, but he's not great at any of them. He does have a cannon of an arm, so that's nice.
He can. He could do like with the Red Sox specifically. He would be the DH, and he can get Casas the occasional spell day at DH. He can get whoever's the left fielder. If it's Duran, like he can get guys days off because if Duran's the left fielder, Santander can play left, and Duran can take a day at DH, or Duran could go to center, and Sedan could take a day off, or. He and Duran are probably not going to right. So I don't know. It doesn't necessarily help right. But it could get you days off at three different positions, which I think is valuable for the Sox, who, if you've noticed their minor leagues, they are bringing up every single guy and teaching them to play multiple positions. That is a thing that this team is valuing moving forward.
By the way, two things. Pronunciation, Santander. So we were right about that. Thank you for that. Nicknames, Tony Taters and Agua Blanca, which I don't know the reasoning behind that. What's that like? Water
means white water.
White water. I don't know why, but that's a cool Agua Blanca. I like that.
The other thing to think about with Santander is he's definitely going to get the qualifying offer. And earlier this year, when I thought it was, and just to give a little spoiler here, I don't think the Red Sox are giving Tyler O'Neill the qualifying offer. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm pleasantly surprised. Based off of the reporting, based off of things we've heard, just doesn't seem to be a lot of buzz towards O'Neill getting the qualifying offer. If he got the qualifying offer and declined it, then the money for Santander doesn't scare me at all. The money and the pick to go from O'Neill to Santander. So you'd be losing a pick. You'd be committing more money annually, most likely, unless you give him the qualifying offer. And you'd be committing more years to go from O'Neill to Santander to decrease in OPS. You correct me if I'm wrong OPS wise, Sammy, but I think Santander is certainly worse against left-handed pitching than O'Neill, because O'Neill was the third best in baseball, but I assume he's better against right-handed pitching. So it's like, how much better are you getting going from one to the other is the question.
You want to hear it? So, OPS wise against righties, 822 with a 513 slug, 32 home runs. And then against lefties, he's hitting not 793 OPS. So that's right under 800. That's still very good. But it's not Tyler O'Neill. So you will actually get worse against lefties, but even better against righties, and you'll have a little bit more balance in your lineup. That's another one who's not a perfect fit. I think we're going to have to get away from the quote unquote perfect fit, because other than like Garrett Crochet, maybe for the rotation, none of the spots the Red Sox need to fill have quote unquote perfect fits. Everything is going to come with a little caveat, like closer Tanner Scott, really good, not a huge track record. So you're kind of taking a risk there. Bregman, contact right-handed third baseman, could also play second, can also play short, not ideal to play short, but he's played all around. He's 31 years old. So I keep bringing up quote unquote perfect fit, but it's kind of like talking about a fairy tale. They don't exist. Hardly.
Exactly. For right-handed bat, and this is going to be something that we're going to talk about a million times this offseason, unless they re-sign or unless they give O'Neill the qualifying offer and he accepts it. Which, by the way, the deadline for players that receive the qualifying offer to accept it is November 19th, which I believe is a Tuesday at 4 p.m. So a couple weeks. Sometimes you'll see some deals go down. Like, I remember... Well, it's basically why Waka's deal with the Royals went down when it did, because they were going to give him the qualifying offer. He wanted to get a deal done so he didn't have the kind of stench of the qualifying offer attached to him. Newsflash, if Tyler O'Neill gets the qualifying offer and declines it, I think the path to returning to the Red Sox is still super... Like, he would probably come back, because I don't know who's going to sacrifice a pick to sign O'Neill to a short-term deal. I question why any team gives up the pick. Like the Giants are about to maybe lose Blake Snell, and they just gave him like $30 million or whatever and lost a draft pick for 1 year of Blake Snell in a non-playoff year. Like, that's a huge failure.
Yeah, that's bad.
So like, you got to be absolutely sure you're getting a guy with, if you're giving up that pick. And if you're only signing a guy to like a 1 or 2 year deal, like, even if you succeed, you're failing.
It's tough, man. These are tough calls. This is such a hard offseason coming up for Craig Breslow. Like, the list of things he has to fix it's not a huge list, but doing them is going to be really difficult. Starter, closer, right-handed bat. Good luck, man.
Yeah, the bullpen thing, and we're not going to get too deep into that this episode, but it'll be interesting to see. I still think Justin Slayton should be, like, even if they went and got Tanner Scott, which I've said it a million times, he's the first reliever I've actually advocated to see my favorite team pay legitimate money for. But even if they did get him, I wouldn't want him to be the closer. Like, I would want him to be the high leverage lefty, and you find a righty to be a consistent closer and maybe be open to throwing Tanner Scott in those out in those innings. Like,
that'd be that weird. Yankee, I mean, you kind of have to, because you have to pay him as a closer. You can't get Tanner Scott if you're paying him as like Chris Martin, who's a great pitcher, but he's a setup man. You got to pay him closer money. So, like, I don't know, the conversation for another day. But yeah, it's big takeaway. Good luck, Craig Breslow. This is going to be very difficult. We all have full confidence in you.
That's the thing, Sammy, is it could be as simple as just filling the open holes.
I didn't even laugh at that. That was all you. I didn't even say anything. Were you 14 years old?
It could be as simple as that. But the way I look at it, when you talked about Tyler O'Neill, you referenced the Red Sox strikeout rate and how they can't bring a guy back with that strikeout rate.
Well, they could. But like,
I know what you see, Pat. Congrats to...
Did it happen?
Will Urubrandu, Gold Glove.
Yay, Thick Willie!
Let's go.
So hey, White Sox, what do you think about that Gold Glove rookie?
And Garrett, I was about Taylor to say. Yeah. Ugh. I was about to say, give that Gold Glove shine. I like it. It's good. But no, and honestly, this is actually great because it kind of ties into what I was saying is, yes, you could just like replace O'Neill with a lower strikeout guy. But the fact of the matter is only one Red Sox regular last year was above average in strikeout rate. And that was Yoshida, who we all think should be traded. So it's going to take more than just like Tyler O'Neill. And even they could also bring Tyler O'Neill back and, you know, hope that whoever they play at second base, whether it be Campbell or Grissom, doesn't strike out much. If you trade Willier, he struck out a bunch. If you trade Wong, which I don't know, I could see them trading Wong.
I want to keep Wong and keep him as like a utility guy because that's what they're grooming him for. Imagine that. First base, second base, third base, catcher. And they'll probably teach him left field because they love to do that. Yeah, Gordo, come on, ride with me. Connor Wong, utility supreme.
Would he be the only backup catcher on the roster? If he's the only backup...
No.
Okay,
no,
then I'm off board. No, if he's the only backup catcher on the roster, I'm okay with it. If he's not, then it's just useless to me.
You get one guy to plug all your holes.
Anyway.
Oh, God. That's good.
Chris Sale won the Cy Young, too, by the way. Or, sorry, Gold Glove.
Yeah.
He'll win the Cy Young, too.
It's hilarious. Pitcher Gold Glove. What an award. Greg Maddux has like 47 of those.
Yeah, he does.
Any enough said or anything? Yeah, enough said before we get out of here.
Well, my enough said was going to be talking about Chris Sale winning the Pitcher Gold Glove, but I guess I could pivot to if a pitcher is a great defender, does that boost his value at all? 1%.
Yeah, a little bit, but not
0.5 of a percentage. Who's the best defensive pitcher the Red Sox have ever had?
Ooh.
I know who. Actually, I have an answer for that.
Yeah, tell. There is someone, right? Is it Rick Porcello?
Tim Wakefield.
Wakefield.
He was a really good defender. Yeah. He was a shortstop. Yeah. But yeah, pitcher Gold Glove. You know who won it last year in the AL, I think, if I remember correctly, was Griffin Canning. Oh, yeah.
For the pitcher? The guy that just got traded?
Yep.
Huh.
Beef up that defense.
Sonny Gray has a couple, I feel like, too. Maybe not.
How many does Maddux have?
Maddux win like 19 14? Or something?
It's something crazy.
18 fucking 18 Gold Gloves.
Oh, wait. Yeah. What about Zach Greinke? Check on Greinke. He won a bunch, too.
I feel like they just like gave Maddux the six. Yeah.
Greinke
like
has six? Just,
there's no way to measure. There must be a way to measure pitcher defense. But back then with Maddux and the late 80s, the 90s, and the early 2000s, I bet they just were like, you know what? Just give it to old Greg drinking out of a shoe. Shout out to anyone who gets that reference, drinking Bailey's from a shoe.
I got it.
Old Greg. All right, that's all I got for my enough said.
Pat, you got enough said?
Yeah, I'm all the way in on Drake May. I was before he even touched the football field. But after today's game, and after the now three, four games he's played, I'm all the way in. You give this guy weapons, he's a legit franchise quarterback. I'm all
Pat,
the-
can we also just point out, you're talking to two guys that wanted to sit him the entire season.
Whoa, yep. What? I didn't say that.
Hold on. I said sit him. I said sit him until the offensive line proves that they can support a rookie quarterback, which
yeah, that's not a realistic timetable.
They haven't proven they can do it, and he keeps getting hit in the head. You're talking to guys who wanted to tank for him, though, Joe. Like, we're Drake May stands. We love Drake May. It's nothing against Drake May. I just think the rest of the team sucks.
Yeah, I wanted him to sit until I think what happened is what happened. I said week five, because then they have like a homestand, but then I actually was wrong about that because one of those games was in London. I just didn't read the schedule carefully, but my accidental take was correct. So I get huge credit for that, obviously.
Credit to us, Sammy. We're such ball knowers for football.
Oh, dude. Between the sticks, push the ball down the field, and hut hike.
God, do I have enough said? Oh, I have enough said. Garrett Cole opted out of his contract, which, if you're not familiar, he had 4 years left on his deal with the Yankees at $36 million a year. And the deal is he can opt out of those 4 years, but the Yankees can void the opt-out if they simply add a fifth year at the $36 million. And they pushed that deadline back to... So Cole has opted out. The Yankees have yet to decide. And they've pushed that opt-out or that opt-in, opt-out decision, whatever, back to Monday. So there's a chance that they've made the decision or whatever by the time you're listening to this. But here's to hoping that somehow this gets all fucked up. I honestly think that they... I don't know what I would do if I were them, but I think I'd feel pretty comfortable if they opted in and chose to pay him $36 million a year until he's 39 years old, when his elbow almost blew out this year and his velocity was ticking a little bit downward. I was just a tiny bit surprised that he opted out, because I don't know, especially with all the pitchers on the market, I don't know if there is a guaranteed $150+ million deal out there for him on the open market right now at his age.
He must know he's getting it, though.
Maybe.
There's no way. Like, maybe. It wouldn't surprise me. Yankees are still pretty liberal with their money. Like, they, I think they'll bring him back. It's weird. It's taken a while. I know they have until 5 o'clock Eastern on Monday, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know what the benefit to waiting it out is. Maybe there's something small. So I don't know. But I think he'll be back with the Yankees.
Yeah. I think the big thing too with Cole is if you don't pick that up, you let him walk, you now have two separate headaches. You have a pitching staff with no ace and the top five player in baseball had for 1 year as a free agent. I think they just stomach it, throw the back year on, and just focus on Soto, give them one thing to do. Because if they had to replace or re-sign or anything that's not giving him the option and then also try and lock up Soto, there's no way they would be able to do both. There's no way.
Like, the thing is, if they wanted to, they could get creative and be like, okay, we're going to let Garrett Cole walk and we'll go sign Blake Snell or something like that. They could do that, but that's kind of got a stench on it. Like, if they let Garrett Cole walk and bring him, if they basically do what the Braves did with Freddie Freeman. And I know what the Braves did with Freddie Freeman kind of worked out for all parties, because Matt Olson's been great. Like, yeah, the Dodgers won the World Series and Freddie Freeman was the World Series MVP. But I wouldn't say the Braves the Braves have been good, and the guy they got to replace Freeman has been good. If the Yankees do that with Cole, I have a feeling that the guy that they choose to replace him with, especially in that media market, it's going to be tough. I think I agree with you, Pat. I think the easiest decision would be to stomach it. I kind of hope that they stomach it, because I just think it makes it that much harder for them to keep Soto, which to me, get him out of New York. It would be so great. That's
I think they keep both. It doesn't really scare me, honestly. Like, they, look how weak the American League was. They got smoked once they played a good team. Soto is amazing, but he is one guy. So if they want to put all their eggs into like five different players, by all means, go for it. Still can't play defense, you friggin' losers.
That was such a good inning.
Oh, another thing. Before we wrap, sorry for rambling. Did you guys see the Dodgers scouting report on the Yankees before the World Series? That is the funniest shit. If you didn't see it, the scouting report on the Yankees was basically just put the ball in play and let them lose the game. And that is exactly what happened in Game 5 of the World Series. The Yankees just looked like a bunch of butchers out there. Judge, awful. Cole, awful. Rizzo, less blame to him. Volpe. Bad. Just hilariously bad defense. The Dodgers are such a machine in every way. Like, even their scouting department just nailed it. So congrats again to the Dodgers. Thank you to the Dodgers, I should say, for saving the world from darkness. And just one of the funniest scouting reports I've ever seen.
And let it serve as motivation, or just a quick little reminder that if the Red Sox were in the World Series, that would probably be the scouting report on them too. So next year at spring training, or however you want to align this team, like, the defense has to be better. I think the Red Sox were a good base running team this year. I wish they were a little bit more aggressive down the stretch. But yeah, the scouting report on the Red Sox almost certainly is put the ball in play and let their infielders go to work. So let's get better in that regard next year, so we don't have the scouting reports. Yeah,
good way to put it. Let them go to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Let them attempt to go to work.
Yeah. Fundamentals win and lose games, man. You learn it every day.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else before we wrap this baby up?
Nope, just socks.
All right, man. Socks, socks, socks. All right. Well, that'll do it for episode 146 of Play Tessie. It's the off season, so would you have it? We're going to be recording even more. We were quote unquote down to two a weeks during the postseason before the offseason started, but now we are right here. So we're going to be going to 3 weeks now. So keep your eyes on your feeds. I believe we're going to have another episode for you dropping Wednesday. The schedule at least to start is going to be a little bit fluid, but I think for now, at least for this week, it's probably going to be Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. But we'll see. We'll TBD on everything. We'll talk about it, give it a test run and adjust if necessary, but trying to be as transparent as possible. We appreciate you guys tuning into this. Remember, subscribe. You get those notifications when episodes drop, which when our schedule is fluid is really useful for you. I know you want to hear all the Sox talk we got for you. So just get those notifications when episodes drop by subscribing. Go to YouTube, watch the videos, watch the episodes too on the Play Tessie playlist, which is on the WEI channel. You can also see everything on the socials. We drop episode clips and everything on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. For Sammy and for Pat and for Joe in the back producing, it is Gordo here for Play Tessie episode 146. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.